Mike DeWald, Dr. Dave McEwen here live at Loyola Marymount University, KSRO, broadcasting coverage leading up to the sixth Democratic debate. And joining us now, New York Times political reporter Reid Epstein. Reid, thanks so much for taking the time sitting down with us.
It's great to talk to you guys.
Yes, thank you for joining us. You've been out on the trail and you've been covering this race. Let's start right at the top with how the dynamic has shifted from, say, the middle of September, the Houston debate, to today. What's happened to the race and how are things shaping up that affect tonight?
Well, it's really kind of solidified into a top four and everyone else. If you look at the candidates in this race by polling, by fundraising, by the amount of attention that they're receiving when they're out on the road, there's Vice President Biden, Senator Warren, Senator Sanders, and Pete Buttigieg, the mayor of South Bend, Indiana. And then there's a real steep drop off to the next tier of candidates, Senator Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota, Andrew Yang and Tom Steyer, who are also on the stage with them tonight in at Loyola. But there's also been, you know, since the middle of the fall, there's been the rise of Elizabeth Warren, and then she dropped off a bit after sort of a series of attacks from Pete Buttigieg. Mm-hmm. There were a couple of polls that had him sort of outpacing the field in Iowa and leading in New Hampshire. And he's come under a sustained assault from Warren and others really since Thanksgiving. And I think tonight is going to be really the first time that he is on stage with Warren and Bernie Sanders when they've had a real motivation to take him down a peg. That sort of dynamic hadn't really matured yet by the Atlanta debate in November.
Right.
But it certainly has in the last couple of weeks as we've seen Warren start attacking Buttigieg by name at her events and to reporters really on a daily basis since Thanksgiving.
Does Klobuchar do that as well? I mean, she took a pass on that in the last time out when she had an opportunity. But does she have one more shot to provide herself as an alternative to Mayor Pete?
It'll be curious to see what she says about him. And she certainly feels deeply aggrieved by him.
Right.
And that's she doesn't do a whole lot to hide that. but it's not really part of the message that she's pushing the way that it has been for Warren over the last couple of weeks. I wouldn't be surprised to see her take some shots at him tonight. And you're right, it may be her last shot. We still don't know what the thresholds are going to be to qualify for the debate in January.
Right.
The DNC has been waiting on a number of things, one of which is sort of what the impeachment schedule is going to be to know whether when the debate might take place. And so really, until we know whether they're going to maintain the current thresholds or make it a little tougher to qualify, that's when we'll know, have a better idea of sort of whether this is the last shot for Senator Klobuchar and others.
Anyone who's not here tonight is out, done, Cory Booker toast, for example?
I mean, nobody's toast, but and Cory Booker had reached a 4% in one poll. The last several months. You need just four to qualify for tonight. There's some discussion that the threshold may be raised to 5% for the January debate. Booker hasn't been at 5% since March. And so there, it's not out of the question that you could have a reversal of fortunes for him and start doing better, but there's no evidence that we've seen that would suggest that he's there.
And okay, so you provided a nice arc headed to impeachment. How does the impeachment dynamic affect the Democratic race, especially as we move to maybe that January 15 debate? We have Iowa just right after that. You have senators on the stage who will be voting about this. Is that a wild card, or is that simply a narrative that the candidates themselves will be able to take a pass on or move past?
I mean, as far as the debate is concerned, it's pretty boring, right?
Yeah.
They all agree. they all agree on that the president did a lot of bad things and should be removed.
Sure.
I would be shocked if any of them are even a little bit critical of how Nancy Pelosi has handled this, or, you know, if it's reasonable to think that they might get asked sort of whether she should pass the impeachment articles onto the Senate quickly or wait, as sort of the discussion's been going on the last...
It does keeps Tom Steyer moving along. I mean, he's been talking about for a year and a half, more money than almost anyone not named Michael Bloomberg.
Right, and if that would be an interesting question to put them on the spot of what should Speaker Pelosi do, because not one of them is interested in second-guessing her or being remotely critical of her at this point. or even perhaps offering her advice on how to move forward. So, but they are. It is a big unknown. What the Senate trial schedule is going to be for impeachment? Because there's five senators in the race. There's three senators who are going to be on the stage tonight.
Right.
They all have said that they will stay in Washington for a trial when and if that happens.
You don't even need a labor dispute to threaten
the
viability of the debate.
And we don't know how long a trial could be. Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, has said he wants to get this over and done quickly. The president has, as he has in a lot of things, has been all over the place, saying at points he wants a quick trial, other times he wants a longer trial and a more robust defense. And we just don't have, sitting here at a little bit before the debate starts, don't really have any idea when that's going to start or how long it's going to take. But if there is a six-day-a-week trial and they're going Monday through Saturday...
In the Senate? It's hard to imagine that, Reed.
It's hard to imagine, but it means that there's probably not going to be a debate because the only free day is going to be Sunday, and they're not going to want to put a debate up against the NFL playoffs when no one will watch.
So let's look at this kind of race and as it shapes out the first couple of elections, primaries. Mayor Pete has to do well in Iowa and New Hampshire, right?
His path is to win Iowa.
Right.
His team says as much that the way that, because he's doing so poorly with voters of color, that the way for him to be credible coming out of the first four states is to win one or maybe two of the first four. And that has to be Iowa and New Hampshire for him.
So if they start lowering expectations, that's telling us internally that they're seeing some change.
It tells us that they don't think they're going to win.
Right.
Right.
And they have to do well in Iowa, New Hampshire with those white electorates before you go to Nevada, before you go to South Carolina.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at the moment, there's no evidence that they're going to do very well in Nevada or South Carolina.
Right.
And what's more important, they can survive not doing well in those places. They can't survive getting skunked on the Super Tuesday states with the big delegate. Plays in Texas and California and across the South, where the percentages of people of color in those electorates far exceed what you see in Iowa and New Hampshire.
So if we fast forward to the middle of March, April Fool's Day, that time period, it's wide open still, isn't it?
It's a place. I mean, there's any number of things could happen, right? If Joe Biden has a big comeback in Iowa and wins, there's a scenario where he wins Iowa, wins New Hampshire, and the show's over.
The show's over.
There's the same scenario. Elizabeth Warren could win Iowa and New Hampshire and run away with it.
Bernie keeps plugging along, though.
Bernie has the highest floor at this point of any candidate. Bernie's supporters are committed to Bernie. They're not going anywhere else. But he may have the lowest ceiling.
Right.
And then there's a scenario where the first four states are won by four different people, and Mike Bloomberg comes in spending hundreds of millions of dollars on TV ads in all the Super Tuesday states and throws a monkey wrench in everything.
Right.
And so I think this is as wide open a primary at this point as we've seen in a couple of generations.
So if we look at this writ large for what happens for November, how do Democrats defeat a president who's had solid approval, has those legions that will come out and turn out for him, has that 90-95% approval by Republican identifiers in a growing economy during peace? How do Democrats win? Can they do it?
Maybe. We'll find out in 11 months.
Yeah.
They won in 2018.
On health care,
on a lot of issues that weren't Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of their candidates on the ballot are going to try that again in 2020. It's going to be a lot harder because he's going to be at the top of the ticket. But the president's approval numbers basically have not moved since his inauguration.
Right. So let's end with this. What's been, you think, the biggest surprise that you've seen in the race so far? Is it the wide open nature of it from one or two generations? Is it that Bernie has persisted? Is it that there's been an alternative Mayor Pete or whatever it looks like? What do you think has been the biggest?
I mean, I think the Mayor Pete rise, if we had this discussion a year ago, would have been the most surprising.
Right.
The idea that a 37-year-old gay mayor of a town of 100,000 people would have outlasted, enough senators and governors to make a football team out of,
right.
Would not, you would have, could have done well making that bet. I have been surprised. I think that Cory Booker and Kamala Harris's inability to catch fire, given sort of what the expectations were for them coming into this, are very surprising.
Isn't Cory Booker Obama? I mean, haven't we seen that page before? And therefore, he doesn't, you know, he didn't grab anybody and he hasn't.
I mean, the lesson for Booker is that if you don't have a broad online grassroots donor presence,
yeah,
that you're in a lot of trouble.
You're in a lot of trouble.
So either the two key pieces for any of these candidates are sort of a broad online donor base and support with black voters.
Right.
And if you have one of those two, you are a player. And if you have both, you're probably going to win. And if you don't have either, then you're cooked.
You're cooked. Excellent. Reid Epstein, New York Times. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks.
Today. Thank you.